I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. In the election earlier this month, Democrats won historic numbers of seats in Congress, and for many of those victorious legislators, health care was a central issue. While Republicans have vilified the Affordable Care Act for 8 years, the public remains somewhat evenly divided in support of Obamacare. Open enrollment for health insurance continues until December 15th. Nationally, enrollment is down 38% from the same time last year. The other thing that's down? The cost. Michelle Eberle, the executive director of the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange, gives us an update on our state. Plus, Vincent DeMarco of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative previews healthcare legislation that the Maryland General Assembly may consider when it reconvenes in the new year. Midday on Healthcare starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today, it's Midday on Healthcare. Open enrollment for coverage under the Affordable Care Act began on the first of this month, and it continues for about 3 more weeks until December 15th. Today on our program, sorting through the changes that have taken place in the healthcare options available to Marylanders. A little later, I will speak with Vincent DeMarco. He's with the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. That's a nonprofit advocacy organization that tries to educate folks about ways to secure quality, affordable health care. But first, we begin with Michelle Eberle. She's the executive director of the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, the agency that runs the Maryland Health Connection. That's where people can see what plans are available and what subsidies they may qualify for when they sign up. If you have a question for Michelle Eberle about options for coverage or anything going on with the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming our conversation on the WYPR Facebook page. Ms. Eberle, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
So nationally, as I understand it, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, enrollment in the ACA plans are down this year about 38% from last year. That's nationally. What's going on here in Maryland?
In Maryland, we had a slow start getting out of the gate. We figure that is due to the election, so there was a lot of focus on the midterms, and we didn't start our big advertising campaign until after the election was over. So what we're seeing now is trending back to normal levels from last year. Our enrollments are up. We are about level with new enrollments, and we are hoping these last 3 weeks we will get many, many more people enrolled in health insurance.
And it's not unusual, based on your experience in the last several years, that the you get more enrollees in the latter part of the enrollment period as opposed to the beginning part. Is that right?
That's correct. And just like all of us, we wait till the last minute to do what we have to do. And so we always see every year a spike at the tail end of enrollment.
There are estimates which come from the congressional delegation here in Maryland about the efforts of the Trump administration to dismantle the ACA, to attenuate it in various ways. Federal funding has dropped from $62.5 million in 2016 to under about $10 million this year. That includes a whole lot of things, including the advertising budget and the length of the enrollment period. This is the second year, if I recall correctly, that it's been 6 weeks. It was 90 days before that. What was your experience last year compared to the year before that, when the enrollment period itself was longer? Did it end up, did you find any attenuation in the number of people who signed up last year in a 6 week period as opposed to a 3 month?
The shortened open enrollment has been a conscious decision in Maryland. So we, as you stated, we originally had a very long open enrollment in the first few years of the exchange. Last year, we went to a six-week enrollment. This year, we are doing the same. What we have found, and this is through polling of our consumers, is that most folks don't really know when the enrollment period is. They know it's around sometime in fall. We know, again, as I was saying earlier, that people wait to the last minute to do their enrolling. So what we found is whether we had it at a 12-week or a 6-week, our results, our outcome was the same. Now, part of that is is that we have a very incredible auto renewal process. So our system is working very well, and folks that don't need to make any change don't have to do anything. So we renew a lot of folks. We did see last year California continued to have an extended open enrollment, and they really didn't see the results they had anticipated. And ours, even though we did a shortened enrollment, we had what we expected. So we haven't found that being an impact. What really is an impact to enrollments is, of course, the affordability of the health plans. So if the premium is reduced enough where people can afford it, they want health insurance.
So let's talk about that.
Sure.
Where are the prices this year as compared to last year?
Well, we are very fortunate in Maryland that we have a state-based exchange. So you mentioned earlier about the marketing dollars that have been decreased by the federal government. That's for the federal exchange. In Maryland, because we are a state-based exchange, our Board of Trustees sets what our budget will be and approves, the governor approves a budget. But actually this year we added $1 million to our media and outreach capabilities so that we could. We know this is a really critical year to get people enrolled. So also by being a state-based marketplace, we are able to work with our governor and with the legislature and get a waiver to the program last spring to the ACA, which allowed us to do a reinsurance program. And what that means is that we are helping protect the insurance carriers from the very catastrophic claim costs that they might incur and have to spread out to all people. And what that resulted in is having across the board a 13% decrease in rates from what they were last year. Now, if you remember when the proposed rates came out, they were anticipated to be 30 to 50 to 70% higher than last year. And they actually overall went down 13% across the board.
So let's pick that apart just for a second. What does the waiver mean? Why did we have to go to as a state, go to the federal government and ask permission to do stuff? And what permission did we ask for?
So we asked permission to change the way that we allow insurance carriers to rate their plans. Because what we're saying is, with this reinsurance program, we will protect them from some of that high risk. They can use that factor in setting their rates. And that's what we had to go to the federal government and say, not only would you approve this methodology, but will you give us some funding to help do this program, in which they did.
And reinsurance means what exactly? So you're insuring insurance companies?
Sort of. It's similar to if you have an umbrella policy, right? So you have an underlying policy, and then you have an umbrella policy that will take care of those really catastrophic, unexpected issues you might have in your personal life. Same with the reinsurance. It's for those carriers where they know, you know, maybe 5% of their consumers or enrollees will have 80% of the cost of claims because they have the catastrophic type claim cost. What this reinsurance pool says, instead of you having to spread that cost among all your enrollees, will help cover some of that catastrophic cost so you can bring rates down for everyone.
I mean, back in the old halcyon days of 3 or 4 years ago, that people referred to that sometimes as a high risk pool, putting all the people with the real big serious medical problems in one category and dealing with them kind of separate and distinctly from everybody else. Is that the gist behind this approach to it?
It's similar. When we had a high risk pool here in Maryland, we were only able to cover about 22,000 people. Through the exchange, we're covering about 150,000 folks. So the breadth of the individuals we can insure is much greater. The idea of a reinsurance program, and again, this is a temporary program. We're looking at a couple of years. We have funding for a couple of years. But the idea is to get everyone insured so that they can afford it. Remember, if they can afford it, they want it. We get them insured, and then by having that mix of individuals that may have high claim costs versus those that have no claim costs or low claim costs, it evens out. And I like to use the analogy of the small group market in Maryland. Maryland went through reforms probably 20 years ago in the small group market. And when the small group market first started, they had, you know, very high rates, and they were up and down and up and down. They now have stabilized to about 3% increase annually. What we'll see eventually, in theory, this is the idea, is that when we get everyone enrolled into individual marketplace, again, we'll start to see that stabilization. And in fact, across the nation, other states are starting to see that.
Michelle Eberle is the executive director of the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange. We're talking about health care during this open enrollment period for insurance under the ACA in the Maryland state-run program. Our number here at Midday, if you have a question about health care coverage, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming our conversation with Michelle Eberle on the WIPR Facebook page. How many Marylanders are covered with health insurance now, and how does that compare to a few years ago?
We have right now about 140,000 that are enrolled for 2019. Those are our current counts. We had, several years ago, we had 157,000. So what we did see, that was probably at our peak. What we did see is as the prices went up, obviously, we lost individuals. So again, we're hoping this year with the prices being down, and in some parts of the state, you can get health insurance for the cost of a movie ticket and dinner. So it's well worth it.
In terms of percentages of the state that is covered one way or the other, either through private insurance, through their employer or whomever, or on the exchange, where do we stand and how do we compare to other states?
We're doing quite well. We have 94% of our of Marylanders have some form of health insurance. So the last statistic was 6.1% that are still the uninsured. That's down from just right before the start of the ACA. It was up at 10%. So we've made very good strides. We still need to find the other 6% and get them insured.
There's a narrative out there that it's ever since the debate about the ACA started 10 years ago, that those uninsured tend to be young, healthy people who they're in their 20s or their 30s and they think they're going to live forever and they don't anticipate any health problems, so they don't get insured because, number one, maybe they can't afford it, but even if they can, they're saying, well, I'd rather spend that money on something else. Is that the case? And what is the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange doing to attract these young, healthy people? Because obviously when you put healthy people into the pool, it helps everybody else.
We actually have about 30% of our enrollees are under age 35, which is a good statistic. We constantly look to get more young individuals insured. So we work with the community colleges. We've done specific outreach on the Snapchat and the Facebook and things where we think young folks would come. Our mobile app actually has been a big driver for enrollments with younger individuals. We actually find about 60% of our younger individuals use the mobile app. So it's been a tremendous asset for getting young folks in. But it is a challenge. And this is where I know I even have my niece who I have to hound, who's a young invincible, to get health insurance. And we tell, you know, aunts, uncles, parents, friends, everyone, reach out to those young people, let them know that they may feel they don't need insurance, but unexpected accidents happen, unexpected illnesses occur, and that we really need to invest in health coverage.
Yeah, the app is called Enroll MHC, right? So you can search for that and wherever you buy your apps.
Absolutely.
There is a lawsuit that's been brought by several attorneys general from states around the country concerning the requirement for insurance companies to insure those with pre-existing conditions. I think that's being heard in Texas at the moment, and it's likely to end up at the Supreme Court at some point. How has the existence of that lawsuit, just the fact that it's been sort of hovering over the debate about healthcare through the election and prior to that, how has that, do you think, affected what's going on here in Maryland?
I don't think, and I hope, it has not affected anything in Maryland at this point in time. Again, what we know is that if insurance is affordable, individuals want that peace of mind of knowing that if something happens, they're going to be covered, that they can not only get their immunizations and their annual exams, which are part of the health coverage, but that if they are skiing and break a leg, or if the, you know, any of those issues where they really need to be sure they're not going to have a financial impact by not having health care. So we like to focus on what we can do to keep those health care costs down, to keep individuals healthy, and hope that we'll have more people in the health insurance marketplace.
The individual mandate, which is the other thing that's been very controversial, the federal individual mandate has been taken away. That was part of the tax bill that the Republican Congress passed a year ago. How has that affected, and there's some legislation, we're going to talk about this with Vinnie DeMarco in a little bit, that is expected to be on legislators' desk when the General Assembly reconvenes in January. But working around the fact that people are no longer penalized if they don't have health insurance, that was the thought behind this mandate. How's that play into all this?
So the mandate is still there. They just reduced the penalty to $0. So essentially, there is no mandate, although it is still on the books. Again, different views on that. Some folks say, well, the penalty was not that much, so that, again, it really didn't impact people that truly didn't want insurance. If they had to pay $700 a penalty, they would have paid $700. I know.
I mean, they just found it financially better to pay the penalty rather than to buy health insurance.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
If the penalty is $700 and you have to pay $200 a month, I mean, it doesn't take long to figure that out if you feel that you don't need that health insurance. But again, it goes back to our point that let's get health insurance affordable for everyone so that you don't have to make that decision. And then it's also communicating to people the value of having health insurance. And sometimes that's a little more difficult because some folks, if you're healthy or if you just are opposed to having health insurance, you don't want it. But it really is something that we view as very valuable to all Marylanders.
About a month ago or so, Congressman Elijah Cummings, Congressman John Sarbanes, Senator Ben Cardin, and others from the Maryland congressional delegation, not including Congressman Harris from District 1, got together and had predictions about what might happen if the Trump administration is successful in continuing their efforts to dismantle the ACA. They talk about 167,000 Marylanders with pre-existing conditions could lose coverage or face hikes. 160,000 women here in Maryland could be charged more than men for the same coverage. Workers in high-risk occupations, construction, that kind of stuff, could face really serious premium hikes. What do you think about those estimates, those claims? Where do you see them from your perch?
Well, it would be very unfortunate if the administration did anything to further destabilize the Affordable Care Act. I think we've heard nationally, and we certainly have heard in Maryland, that people want health insurance and need health insurance. It could be disruptive, and mostly if anything was done around the tax credits. So today, tax credits are available, and they're available in advance, so you can use them to pay down your premiums. That's what's keeping it affordable for many people. If that was disrupted, it would have a huge impact because a lot of individuals rely on that tax credit to be able to pay that monthly premium. And I think what we forget often is that an employer-sponsored health insurance, the employer picks up a big chunk of that tab. So individuals don't feel that total cost of the health care is their own burden. But in the individual market, there is not that employer to pick up that to subsidize that cost. So individuals are really hit hard.
What are you hearing from the insurers themselves, I mean, about the stability of the market? We always heard as this debate was raging, I mean, you know, Senator John McCain, the late senator, very famously, you know, gave a thumbs down to a Senate effort to repeal the ACA back in the fall of 2017, I guess. And insurance companies at that point were saying it's this uncertainty that made it very difficult to predict what our costs were going to be and to even figure out what the rates should be. So I guess they were erring on the side of it was going to be expensive because the rates were just skyrocketing. What are you hearing from them now? Is the market more stable now despite what's been going on since the election of Mr. Trump?
I would say, yes, it is definitely more stable. But we've had to really swerve and roll with the punches as they've come to us. For instance, when the cost-sharing reduction was not funded, we worked very hard with the carriers in a very short amount of time to load that funding that was eliminated onto plans.
And that was federal funding that was sharing the cost, right?
That's right. And we have great partnership with both Kaiser and CareFirst and work very closely with them on, again, trying to keep insurance affordable for all. The reinsurance program is one of the areas that will help stabilize the market, and that's what we're looking to. And part of that is, again, getting premiums down so we get individuals enrolled. We're hoping to get some new carriers into the marketplace. So,
because we lost a few a couple years ago.
We did lose a few, mm-hmm. That's right. And the insurance...
Prospects good for them rejoining or others?
Well, we're hopeful on that. The insurance commissioner, Al Redmer, and I are out talking to folks, and there's been some interest. We did have one University of Pittsburgh Medical Center actually had an HMO product approved in far western Maryland. So we're hoping we might be able to get that rolled out through the exchange. But the point of the reinsurance is really keep the rates low, get more people enrolled, make the market more competitive by bringing in more issuers, and really have a robust marketplace here in Maryland.
I'm going to let you go in just a couple minutes. And as I mentioned, we're going to talk to Vinnie DeMarco, but I want to talk about a legislative audit of your agency that was just completed at the end of last month. It was released on the 30th of October by the state office that conducts audits on various agencies, and they found what they called significant deficiencies in the design or operation of internal controls, instances of non-compliance with applicable rules. You had a response to that audit in which you said you agreed with many of the findings. This audit covered the years 2014 through 17, so you weren't the executive director, but you were for most of that time the chief operating officer. What can you tell us about that audit? Are these red flags that taxpayers should be worried about?
Well, first I'll say no. The taxpayers should not be worried about this. And the Office of Legislative Affairs came in and they audited. They were on site for 10 months and did a full comprehensive audit. And we welcome that. We actually really look forward to having folks come. We have about 10 different audits a year or every 3 years in the case of OLA. But what we like is that we like folks to look at how we're operating in our procedures and our process so that we can do better. And some of the things they found, a policy was in place but was not documented. So that's a finding. The biggest challenge that we had in their finding, in my opinion, is where they were worried about how we were determining eligibility for Medicaid enrollees. And the state has had a longstanding process approved by CMS where they use Maryland state data because it's current, more current than the federal tax information, which is generally 2 years old.
And the auditor was asserting that you should be using the federal numbers instead of the state numbers?
Using both of them, which we do actually use both of them for our commercial insurance market. But for Medicaid, the policy has been, as I said, and approved by CMS to just use the state. So we agree with that. That's one where we agree with the finding because it's true. We're not doing that, but we're not doing that because it's not how CMS or...
And that's the Center for Medicaid Services.
That's correct.
That's the federal program.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Have approved us to do it. So we're looking at that, and the recommendation in that case was even to go back to CMS and have them amend our agreement to require us to tap into the federal data as well. So those are the things that, although it sounds treacherous, it really isn't. We're doing something the way that it's been approved by the federal government to do. But that doesn't mean that there may be other options we can look at and do something better. So we had 8 findings down from the audit the 3 years prior. Everything is either actually half of those are already concluded. We've already resolved them. The other 4 will be done no later than August of next year. So, again, we welcome audits to make us a better agency.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, it does sound treacherous. I mean, the term significant deficiencies is a term of art in the auditing business. But, you know, most folks hear that and think, whoa, what's going on? So we will keep tabs on that as well as the other things as this moves forward. So I appreciate your coming in, Michelle Eberle.
Thanks so much.
Michelle Eberle is the executive director of the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange. Again, open enrollment under the ACA ends in a little over 3 weeks on the 15th of December. Next week, Maryland Health Connection will hold several last chance events throughout the state, Tuesday through Sunday. They're all over the place. You'll be able to get free in-person help enrolling for health coverage through the state's health insurance marketplace. And we'll have links to a complete schedule of all of those events on our website, wypr.org/midday. You can also get an estimate and enroll in plans for 2019 at marylandhealthconnection.gov or through the Enroll MHC mobile app. Open enrollment, remember, is for qualified health plans only. If you are currently enrolled in or eligible for Medicaid or the Maryland Children's Health Program, you can enroll at any time throughout the year. You don't need the open enrollment period. You'll get a notice when it's time for you to renew your plans. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll be joined by Vincent DeMarco. He's the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. That's a healthcare advocacy organization. We'll take some of your calls and comments. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on tomorrow's show, Wes Moore. He's the host of WYPR's Future City. He's going to join me. We're going to talk about the post-election landscape here in Maryland and across the country. Wes is appearing in a special event tomorrow night at the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway Theater here in Baltimore. Details about that event are on our website. And Wes and his mother, Joy Moore, will join me here in Studio A tomorrow on Midday. Joy's actually going to join us from New Orleans, I believe, but Wes will be with me here in the studio. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about health insurance and the options available to Marylanders under the Affordable Care Act and elsewhere in the private insurance market. My guest now is Vincent DeMarco. He is the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. That's a nonprofit established in 1999 to educate Marylanders about ways to get affordable, quality health insurance and to advocate state lawmakers around health care policy. You can join our conversation with Vinny DeMarco at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet at @midday WYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And we are streaming our conversation on the WYPR Facebook page. Vinny, good to see you, sir.
Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate that. So you are a big advocate for a thing called the Health Insurance Down Payment Program. This is something that you're going to be introducing with the legislators when the Assembly reconvenes in January. What's that about? What's that proposal?
Well, first of all, you had Michelle Eberle on. She has done a tremendous job in Maryland in making the Affordable Care Act work, providing health care to over 400,000 people, 20 million across the country. And the good news is efforts to repeal the ACA have failed. The Affordable Care Act is here to stay. This election cemented that. But unfortunately, the Trump administration and the previous Republican Congress did everything they could to undermine that law. And most importantly, in December of 2017, as part of the federal tax bill, they stopped enforcement of the federal individual responsibility provision, which required that everybody get health care.
What folks refer to as the individual mandate.
Individual mandate that we required people to get health care or pay a penalty to the federal government. That's no longer being enforced. Sadly, that's going to cause nationwide millions of less people insured and cause premiums to go up. Very, very sad that Congress did that. Every state should take it upon itself to try to fill that gap. Massachusetts has had one of these laws since 2006, and they have one of the lowest uninsured rates in the country. New Jersey, Vermont, and D.C. just passed similar individual mandate laws since the federal one was gutted. We in Maryland are working on a measure to make it even better. We're calling it the Health Insurance Down Payment because under this provision, which we're working on with Families USA, is to say this: if you're uninsured, you'll owe a penalty, but that penalty will be used to insure you, to get you insurance, unless you specifically say, just keep it as a penalty. And we think this will encourage tens of thousands of additional people to get health insurance, which would help bring premiums down. Senator Brian Feldman from Montgomery County and Delegate Jocelyn Peña-Melnick from Prince George's County, the new vice chairs of the key Senate and House committees, will be the lead sponsors. We are very excited about this proposal. And let me say this. There are about 80,000 Marylanders that all they'd have to pay to get full insurance is the amount of that penalty, and they'd get a full good quality health insurance plan because they'd also be eligible for federal tax credits. So this is going to get tens of thousands of people insured who aren't insured now, many of them the young people you were talking about. They will get the insurance they need for themselves and their families, and everybody's premiums will not go up as high. I want to say one very important thing. There's a misnomer out there, a fallacy, that premiums for everybody have gone up because of the ACA. I heard it on election night. A Republican National Committee person said premiums for everybody have gone up because of the ACA. It's true that premiums in the individual market have gone up because of Trump activities, which we're working on preventing in Maryland. But the fact is, for most people, premiums have gone up much more slowly because of the ACA, because more people get insured. There's less uncompensated hospital care that we all pay for, something we've called the hidden healthcare.
Uncompensated hospital care is when people go to the emergency room.
Yes.
And everybody pays for that.
Everybody pays for that. And when that goes down, the burden on all our premiums goes down. So the data that we release shows that since the ACA, the premiums for small businesses in Maryland have gone up much more slowly than before the ACA.
So it's a matter of the rate of increase. I mean, we've gotten calls when we've covered healthcare here on Midday, you know, from folks who say, you know, I run a small business, I have 12 people, 15 people working for me, and my premiums have, you know, tripled. I mean, we do hear that. You hear that anecdotally. There is certainly a lot of rhetoric around the rates of increase and the amounts of money people are paying. And it is difficult to sort of discern it. But when it comes to this individual mandate, when it comes to sort of replacing that with this health insurance down payment program that you guys are proposing, we were just talking about this with Michelle Eberly. Part of the problem with the individual mandate, as a lot of people saw it, was that the penalty wasn't high enough so that people could make the financial decision, which was kind of a no-brainer, that I'd rather pay the penalty and skip the insurance than have to pay the insurance. It's just cheaper to do that. So what would the penalty be? And is it going to be severe enough to oblige people to get health care that they may not think they need?
Well, our proposal is to have the same penalty that the federal government has had,
$700.
Which is $700 per person up to maybe $2,100 for a family. So that's the range. The fact is, millions of people have gotten insurance because of that penalty. And that's what the Congressional Budget Office has concluded, that about 6 million less people will be insured if we get rid of that penalty around the country. That's why states have to fill that gap. But I want to reemphasize, there are about 80,000 Marylanders that they'll owe that $700. That's all they'll have to pay for health insurance because they're eligible for federal tax credits. So the odds are very great that each of them are going to say, well, just use that $700 to get me insurance. I don't have to pay another penny. Why should I just waste that $700? Now, there are people who make more than that who will have to make a decision. Do I want to add more money to that $700? Some of them will say, just keep the $700. I don't want to pay any more money for health insurance. But the fact is, because at least those 80,000 people will get insurance, everybody's premiums will go higher much more slowly, saving us all money.
And so about, the 80,000 people then generally are on the low income part of the scale.
Yes. And there are 50,000 people, even lower income, who are eligible for Medicaid and not enrolled. This system would find those people and get them enrolled in Medicaid, which would also reduce uncompensated care and help all of us. The fact of the matter is, the more people are insured, the more everyone benefits. And our data shows clearly the premiums for small businesses have gone up much more slowly since the ACA because of this reduction in uncompensated care. The Affordable Care Act helps everyone.
So last year, the legislature considered a program during the General Assembly, but it was a similar bill.
Right.
But it wasn't the same exact thing, but it was a similar bill. They didn't pass it. It died in a Senate committee, and instead they passed a commission to study it. Governor Larry Hogan has not taken, as I understand it, a public position on that bill or this one that you're proposing. But in the past, he has certainly been, as many fellow Republicans are, critical of the individual mandate. What's your speculation about the governor's position and its chances of passing this year?
Well, first of all, that commission was created the year before at our request to determine what to do to protect Maryland from whatever Trump and the Republicans in Congress are trying to do. And that commission recommended the reinsurance program that Michelle talked about, which has done so much to reduce premiums this year. And that commission now is thinking about this health insurance down payment. So I think it's a good process that a legislature has created. And I want to emphasize the individual mandate was first introduced in the Maryland General Assembly by a Republican, former Republican delegate Doc Elliott from Carroll County, and nationally by former Republican governor of Massachusetts, now going to be Senator Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. So it's got a lot of Republican pedigree, this proposal. And we're hoping that Governor Hogan and Republicans in the legislature will look at it, especially when it's a down payment, as something they should support. But we feel very confident that the Maryland General Assembly will give this a close look, and especially with terrific leaders like Brian Feldman and Jocelyn Pena Melnick, we think we have a very good chance of enacting this law. If we don't enact it, everybody's premiums will go up more. So it just makes sense to get this law enacted, to get tens of thousands of new people insured, and to help keep everybody's premiums down.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more about this with Vinnie DeMarco. He is the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Midday on Healthcare continues after this quick break at 410-662-8780. If you'd like to be part of our conversation about healthcare, love to hear your experience. Have your premiums gone up? Have they gone down? Have they stabilized over the last couple of years? You can send us an email to midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. If you're just joining us, we're talking about healthcare. My guest is Vincent DeMarco. He's the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Our phone number, if you'd like to be part of our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And you can ping us on Facebook as well. We are streaming our conversation on the WYPR Facebook page. Frank Smith is checking us out on Facebook, and he writes, ACA is here to stay, better than anything we've seen in a generation in terms of insurance and health care reform. So there's a fan of the ACA. Maryland has no shortage of fans of the ACA. But let me just make sure that you clarify. The reinsurance program is different than the health insurance down payment program.
Yes.
So these would happen concurrently. They would both be in effect. And what is the state's financial obligation to both of these programs? What's this going to cost?
Well, the reinsurance program, which was enacted this year, is the state is putting up $350 million by capturing a tax on premiums, which was the federal government is not enforcing this year. So they're taking that money and getting some federal money through a waiver we're obtaining. Michelle Eberle did a great job, and this was a bipartisan piece of legislation that the governor and the General Assembly enacted and did a great, great job. Delegate Pena Melnick taking a lead, and that is keeping premiums down for Maryland's individual market. The down payment is a very different matter that does not require federal approval and just says we're going to close the gap that the federal government is created by not enforcing the federal individual mandate, individual responsibility. So what this would say is in Maryland, if you're not insured the year before, you'll owe, say, $700, which is the minimum. And the state will say to you, we'll use that money to insure you unless you say don't, just keep it. And we think many, many tens of thousands of people will get insured that way. It will help them, their families, and keep all of our premiums down. And our polling shows that this proposal is very popular. Democrats, Republicans, and independents support it. A straight individual mandate is less popular amongst Republicans, but when you phrase it as a health insurance down payment, the way I've described, it is popular all across the board.
So we talked a little bit about the bill that was introduced last year. Yeah. It was a similar bill. It would have required Maryland to create an insurance stabilization fund, and they talked about a health insurance escrow fund. It was also sponsored by Brian Feldman, who's behind this new piece of legislation. What's the distinction between the two pieces of legislation, and why do you think that this new legislation, the Health Insurance Down Payment Program, has a better chance of passing when last year's did not?
Well, first of all, the stabilization fund did pass. That was part of the reinsurance program. But Senator Feldman and Delegate Peña Melnick put in the down payment proposal last year. And basically, the legislatures took a lot of time, as they should have, to pass the reinsurance program. It was very, very difficult. There just wasn't enough time to do both.
They just couldn't do both.
Which we understand. This was very difficult. But we have spent, under the leadership of Senator Feldman and Delegate Peña Melnick, a lot of time since the session making this down payment really, really work well. And Stan Dorn from Families USA has played a big role working with us. We think this proposal will be ready to be enacted in 2019 and will help Maryland a lot. And we think it'll be a national model. Senator Chris Van Hollen, Congressman John Sarbanes, and others, members of the federal delegation, like the proposal. And I believe if we do it right in Maryland, when Congress is ready to go forward rather than backward, they may do a down payment rather than an individual mandate that's done in the past. So we could be a real national model here.
Should we expect this bill to be introduced early? Is this a January bill? Is this a February, a March bill?
Oh, it'll definitely be introduced in January. We hope to have hearings early. We hope to have a lot of co-sponsors. And we hope for this bill to pass as soon as possible in the General Assembly session.
And as I understand it, a number of people who were running for the House of Delegates and the Senate signed on to say that if they were elected, they would support it?
Well, they were co-sponsors last year. Mm-hmm. We think we'll have a strong majority of co-sponsors of the legislature next year.
All right, let's go to the phone. Susan in Baltimore. Susan, welcome to Midday with Vinnie DeMarco.
Hi, thank you. I've been hearing you say that it's a $700 fine if you don't have insurance. Am I right about that?
That's the minimum. It goes up to like $2,100 depending on size of family, but the minimum is $700, yes.
Okay. And you're saying people might decide not to pay that, to take that money and buy health insurance. And my question for you is, who do you know that can get that health insurance for that price?
People at a low enough income level, that's all they'd have to pay because they're eligible for federal tax credits. We think there are 80,000 people in Maryland that $700 in combination with their federal tax credits would be all they'd have to pay for health care. Now, above that certain income level, people would have to pay more. But there are 80,000 people who we could get insured right away with this proposal.
But there are people in the higher income brackets that where $700 is going to be a better deal for them.
Yes.
We've got to keep in mind, better deal in the context of the fact that they don't have health insurance.
There will be people who will say, okay, keep the $700. Now, what we're going to do with that money is use part of that money for the administrative costs of the program, so it doesn't cost the state any money. And if there's anything left over, use that money to help with the reinsurance or other ways to keep premiums down.
Jackie in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Vinnie DeMarco.
Hi. I'm very low income. However, I have a Blue Cross Blue Shield supplement plan, plus I have Medicare Medicare. So I want to see a doctor who does not take Medicare. And I'm trying to figure out if I pay him completely, can I then turn around and try and get reimbursement from Medicare and then submit that to Blue Cross Blue Shield?
All right. Well, thanks for that question, Jackie. I'm sure you're not alone.
And that is not a question I can really address. Our proposal doesn't affect people on Medicare. I just don't know the answer to that question. You might talk with someone at Blue Cross Blue Shield or the Attorney General's Office has a Consumer Protection Division, which could help you, or the Maryland Insurance Administration.
Yeah, you might even want to call the Maryland Benefits Exchange and just get some counseling from folks who are, directing people towards things on the ACA. So thanks for that call, Jackie. Vinny, before we have to go here in the last few minutes, I want to talk about prescription drugs.
Yes.
There is a proposal to create a drug affordability board.
Yes.
This was adduced first last session, and now it's going to be reintroduced, as I understand it. What would a drug affordability board do, and how would it work?
Well, we're thrilled that Delegate Jocelyn Peña-Melnick and Senator Kathy Klausmeier will introduce this very important legislation next year. The fact of the matter is we have a lot of life-saving drugs out there that are just too expensive for people. There's a guy named Larry Zarzecki who came to us and said that he has Parkinson's, and the drugs that would really help him are so expensive that only 32 Marylanders can afford them. He works with an organization that helps people with Parkinson's. Drugs don't work if people can't afford them. It's a serious problem for many, many Marylanders and Americans, as we hear a lot. This board would say to the drug corporations, you want to charge $100,000 for that drug? Justify it. What's the reason for that? Nobody is saying that to them now. And then would say, well, you want to charge that much? That's not justified. Marylanders are only going to pay $20,000 a year. I'm making up those numbers. But some way of determining what Marylanders could afford. And the fact is that all across the world, people are paying a lot less for their drugs because they have entities that are doing that are saying to the drug corporations, that's way too much. We're not going to pay that much. We're going to pay what's affordable and what can get you enough money to do the research you need. And, you know, when they say...
But who determines it? How would a board know what a big pharmaceutical company really spends on researching?
They're going to ask them. And the fact is we have data showing that the drug corporations spend much more on advertising than on research. That's unjustifiable when people like Larry Zarzecki can't afford the drugs they need. This board will say, wait a minute, you don't need all that much for research. Marylanders can't afford that. You're going to pay a lot less. And the fact is, on some drugs, they're so expensive that only 20% of the Marylanders who need them can afford them. If it was lower cost for Marylanders and 80% could afford them, the drug companies might get the same amount of money. We're not trying to deny them the money they need for research. We're trying to make drugs affordable for Marylanders.
People have compared this proposal to the fact that, for example, there's a public service commission that
yes.
sets energy rates. There's a hospital rate commission
yes.
that sets, you know, hospital rates. The Maryland Insurance Administration sets insurance for other kinds of insurance. Is that a fair comparison? Is that how it's going to work?
It's very fair, and it just really makes me almost laugh when the drug corporations say, why are you picking on us? Why don't you pick on the insurers and the hospitals? Well, insurers and hospitals can't charge any more without going to, as you say, the Maryland Insurance Administration or the Maryland Health Service Cost Review Commission. We're just saying the drug corporations make a vital medicine that people need to stay alive. They should be regulated in this way so that Marylanders can afford the drugs they need. Drugs don't work if people can't afford them.
Got 20 seconds left. What's your understanding of Governor Hogan's position on this bill?
He has said publicly he wants to work with us on this, and we look forward to working with his administration to get this done. And if you want to know more, go to www.healthcareforall.com. www.healthcareforall.com. And thank you very much, Tom.
Vincent DeMarco is the president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative, and we'll have links to more information on our website, including a link to Maryland Citizens Health Initiative at WIPR.org/midday. Thank you, Vinny. I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, local craft beers, locations and hours at joesquared.com. I'd also like to thank Healthy People Juice for providing fresh, local, artisan, cold pressed vegetable and fruit juices. They are delicious. Healthy People Juice is a social enterprise centered around community service and health. They offer a variety of cold pressed organic juices, and they're located in Fells Point. You can find more at healthypeoplejuice.com. Coming up tomorrow, Wes Moore joins me for the hour. We're going to talk post-election politics with this best-selling author and the host of WIPR's Future City. He is appearing on behalf of WIPR in an event at the Parkway Theater tomorrow night right here in Baltimore. We'll have a chance to chat with Wes and his mother, who has a new book about raising children as a single parent. That's all coming up tomorrow afternoon on Midday. Here and Now is up next after a break for news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.